Welcome to episode 2 of Media Impressions. Artificial intelligence is reshaping the world around us. In this episode, Greg investigates the interplay between media and AI.
So last month on Media Impressions, we talked about change and how change ultimately is a constant and what changes in the advertising world is always up for grabs. And there's really no doubting right now that technology is a big driver of that change. But we recognize that even though technology has fundamentally changed how we do our jobs, there's still people there doing those jobs, and there's still people on the receiving end of the ads that we put out into market. And so what's that balance between a future where artificial intelligence makes a lot of the decisions as to where and how we run our ads, and the people who continue to invest in that career in terms of connecting brands and consumers with, theoretically, more appropriate messaging? That's this month's episode of Media Impressions. So way back in March of 2020, or 1956, which at this point is probably about the same amount of time in the past, a man named John McCarthy coined the term artificial intelligence. And then this man was quite an intelligent person. He is, in many ways, the father of this discussion. And I think we have to listen to him when he sums up how we view AI, because I think it's pretty succinct. And he said pretty simply, as soon as it works, no one calls it AI anymore. And so thanks to Skynet and HAL and pop culture in general, I think we all have this completely unrealistic expectation of what it is going to be like when we come face to face with a real AI. The truth, unfortunately, is probably a little less exciting. We are fearful of AI, even though it's really arrived in a lot of different ways. You know, that media coverage we hear about, the excitement about AI is this breathless expectation of how it's going to change our world, while at the same time continually maybe not realizing that full potential. For all of the talks of a super intelligence coming, of the arrival of our soon-to-be robot overlords, we have to recognize that our present already looks a little bit different, and maybe just not in the ways that we'd expect. So a quick primer on AI. Everything that you can think of that's been achieved so far in that field of AI, including these incredible advances in machine learning, it's generally classed as narrow AI. And what's meant by that is it's a goal-oriented algorithm focused on performing a singular task. As you'll hear later, Tesla's wonderful vehicles will get you from point A to point B without much human interference. But they don't make very good cotton candy, because that's not what they're setting out to do. And that's what narrow AI is really about here. It's about setting that goal and optimizing the path from A to B, regardless of what our process is. It's less robot overlord and more instruction manual. So what are those AI that are already yielding dividends? Well, for starters, your email is all but run by AI at this point. Your spam filters, suggestions on who to include on the byline, that life-saving alert that tells you it looks like you meant to attach a file. That's being informed by millions, if not billions, of emails going back and forth across the platforms that we use. And so the very act of sending an email is in a lot of ways influenced by the behaviors that these algorithms have learned from how we send email. And we're better for it. As far as I can tell, my outbox does not send the emails for me yet, but I would actually probably welcome that given how quickly it fills up. So email is an area where AI has really kind of made its mark and helped organize our lives and make it a little bit more efficient. Going a bit further, finding things is difficult. We take for granted that we have the world's knowledge in our pocket, but navigating the internet, not an easy chore. Thanks to Google, we don't really think about it, because search has been optimized and enhanced and perfected through the algorithms that Bing and Yahoo and other engines put out there. And now we're seeing with voice search that Amazon and Alexa and Google Home are perfecting the same approach, but now using your voice as opposed to text. So if you think about it, it's really the same function. It's just a new way to retrieve information. And that's another area where, based off the popularity, quality, connectedness of the information we look for, machines can do a better job at finding what it is we think we need than maybe we can. And even if we could do a better job, it would probably take us a lot longer. So with so much information available to us on demand through the devices that we own, we have to recognize as advertisers the role we play and how content gets surfaced to people and how these artificial intelligences, automations, optimizations, however you want to class them, how they're designed to do that. Because it's a very nuanced decision between surfacing the most relevant information and making the most money possible from the surfacing of that most relevant information. And so what does that mean for advertising? What does that mean for how we consume media? And for those of us who work in the space, what does it mean about our jobs that are coming in the next year, 5 years, 10 years? You know, how different will the world look in December of 2020? Who knows? If we lose sight of the people on either end of the tool, it's all too easy for that value proposition to fall out of balance.
For our first interview, Greg talks to Travis Adams, Vice President of an Account Planning Team, and Megan Woods, Media Manager on our social media team. They both explain how they make AI more effective through their client work.
I would say technology has changed what my role and what I do day to day completely. I think, you know, when I started Harmelin 8 years ago, what I did on a day to day basis is completely different. And a lot of that is the volume of campaigns that we can handle and manage has grown exponentially. I think previously the way we worked, we would not have been able to handle campaigns that we can execute and the speed to which we can execute campaigns. Let's say Facebook. Meg and I worked together on a ton of campaigns, but one of the things that's changed, you know, is really understanding what the goal is and what we're trying to do beforehand and getting everything all set up, you know, correctly on the front end is much, much more critical, you know, than it used to be. You know, we used to run a display campaign that was, you know, five different partners or, you know, that's something I was doing 7 years ago. That was my plan. And now, you know, it could just be, we're just doing Facebook and YouTube, the way that these things optimize and how quickly they optimize, you know, everything on the front end has to be set up really correct, you know, just the right way, or, you know, you're not going to get the results you want.
Do you find, or have you found anything unexpected that caused you to rethink your strategy or rethink the way that the campaign was being delivered, either an audience segment that reacted differently or the ads were running against different content? Like, you know, if you go broader and you let the system do its thing, it could drive you in a different direction. What's that like from your perspective?
I guess we have to trust that these algorithms aren't making assumptions too quickly and that they're giving each potential impression a fair shot in the auction. So there's definitely a level of trust. It's not common practice for a lot of these platforms to send an update every time they make an update to these learning algorithms. So our team spends a lot of time staying on top of the changes that are being made and building relationships with our vendors so we are able to know when those changes happen.
Tell me here, Travis, if you have a perspective on the trust and relationship part too. Like, is that the core component of your job, is to have the trust and the tools that we use and manage relationship with the client, and then the data kind of gives you the ammunition to support that? Or, you know, how does that trust reflect in your role?
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about a campaign we're doing on with Google, their universal app campaign. It's kind of a unique program where you really can't put any targeting in there. It's basically besides geography. So, you know, in that sense, it's a little hard, I think, to translate that for clients. They might have, you know, personas and information about who their target audience is, and they want, you know, everything to kind of match that, and they want to use that research and their, you know, own data to really use that to, for us to go out and find that audience and deliver results for them. In the case of this, you know, all Google is saying is you can't put those parameters in. You want app downloads. We're going to give them to you very efficiently. So that's a bit of a challenge just to make sure that the clients are okay with that. I mean, at the end of the day, if we can make sure that they understand, they will get app downloads, but they really don't know who's downloading them. So I think that's a little bit of a struggle, but again, it's a top performing partner for that. It's just, it's hard for people to, not just for, you know, for me and for our team, but, you know, for clients, especially to just be like, all that stuff, you know, about your audience doesn't matter as much. If you're trying to get app installs, that we're going to get them for you, but you're not going to be able to target anyone.
Yeah. I think the results really speak for themselves too. I think that makes it easier for us to propose, like, say, a broader audience or trusting the algorithm to our clients. And I think, yeah, along with that, it's just our team spends it. This kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier. Our team spends so much time doing testing of how the algorithm works now. Instead of testing individual creative on a 1 month campaign, we're testing, you know, how an app install campaign is going to perform on Facebook with a broad audience versus a specific audience. And we'll test that across different verticals. And then we'll be able to apply those learnings across a ton of different clients. Yeah, so then instead of spending a ton of time working on specific campaigns, we're able to use those learnings across all of our accounts.
Next is John Connor, Media Manager, who expands on these ideas.
you are a very interesting person to talk to because you've worked in a number of different roles, right? You've been on the ad ops team, you've been in the programmatic group, and then you come up to client and just basically start just going off on their processes, I recall. So,
right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of, I guess, where we want to start, John. It's just from the standpoint of your role in technology, how are you using it? Like, what parts of your job do you see technology providing a benefit to? You know, what's that relationship look like on a day-to-day?
I've tried to harness a little bit of what I've picked up along the way from each job. And a lot of that groundwork was laid just by understanding the structure of our digital campaigns and the buys. The more times you try to change things per campaign, the more opportunities you present for an error, for any sort of simple mistake. If you can tweak somebody's vision but fit it within your mold, you get this opportunity to present the information back to them in a way that they needed to see it, or that they didn't realize that they needed to see it this way.
You know, this is a client that on a good year has 600 or so campaign requests, if I'm not mistaken. It might be closer to 900 at this point. They have a lot of ideas, I guess, of what they want is where we're going to go with that. And, you know, that's a lot of volume to process and a lot to keep track of.
We want to be able to take off fragments of time. And if you approach it that way, instead of saying, I want to take hours of time away, then you're missing the opportunity. Because if you could take those little minutes of time, obviously they add up. So if I can say, I don't want to repeat myself, I just want this information here, and I want it to also be here. That's a really liberating thing. And once you unlock that once, then you start to find the other times that you're repeating yourself, or that the information isn't necessarily repeated, but it's just tweaked a little bit. So then you start to take those little pieces of information and find the tweaks and find a way to standardize it. And if you can do that, then you're unlocking more of those little fragments of time until, again, it just builds and builds and builds. And all of a sudden, you have shaved 15 minutes off of your process. And 15 minutes off of your process for one campaign in the scope of 600 campaigns is a really big deal. If you approach standardization, some people get really off put by the idea of automation, because automation to some people turns into like, oh my God, my job's in jeopardy. But that's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to refocus people to the areas that we should be spending our time on. If you're copying and pasting and that takes half an hour out of your day, that's wasted opportunity to focus on your client.
For our last interview, we shift gears and talk automation with two of our software engineers, Hank Mushinsky and John McCabe.
One thing that's really hard to grasp as a person in the computer science realm, and one way that the experts in the what has so far been the media industry or any industry bring to the table, is that domain expertise. There's sort of two kinds of this thing. Like, as you said in your intro, deal, there's a lot of these like small sort of single decision point algorithms that are in place that just decide like a true or false, you know, should this ad be shown or should this suggestion be shown? And then there's larger models that deal with things like natural language. So when you type into your phone and you get a typo, the phone will do autocorrect. Now, autocorrect is based on artificial intelligence in the sense that you describe it, because it can use a more complicated model to determine what's the most likely word for you to have typed wrongly based on where your fingers were on the keys.
How do we know what to do to be effective in that, right? Like this isn't prescriptive in the sense that if you had enough data, you would know exactly who to message at all scenarios with all opportunities, right? You would just know that this is a good opportunity probabilistically. So I think a lot of people, when they hear about this artificial intelligence powering the optimizations and they look to science for the answers, they're looking for an answer key. But what you're talking about is essentially winnowing through a bunch of different scenarios to find the one that probabilistically is the best opportunity. It's never going to be a fixed answer.
No, it's not a fixed answer, because, you know, in reality, your output's always changing based on current events, economic factors, culture, society, all the things that might cause people externally to your ad and externally to your product to decide whether or not to purchase it or interact with your website or whatever your key point of interest is. But even if you were able to do it very well, if you didn't cast a wide enough net, you may miss opportunity because your optimization will find a combination of factors that does pretty well, but you didn't explore broadly enough across the surface of the possibilities to find another opportunity that could be even better. So it's very important to maintain a degree of broad exposure so that when people get into your funnel and you start to target them more specifically, you didn't limit the amount of opportunity there was to find new demographics of consumer.
So put another way, with an infinite number of combinations available to you, it's impossible to scale every single scenario. And even if you got lucky and you stumbled into one that was working for you, human behavior says it's not going to work forever, right? So you have to continue testing.
It could also work forever, but be a very small pool.
There's two ways to improve an ad campaign, right? One is improving the targeting, improving the opportunity, getting more production from the campaigns that we run. The other side is frankly to reduce the overhead that it takes to run it. And so we've seen improvements in terms of the way these platforms are automating the process of buying. I'm curious now, you and John Hank have both spent a decent amount of time at Harmland observing us in our natural habitat. Moving away from AI for a second, just talking about automation and talking about using logic to our advantage, do you see areas of agency life with more potential to optimize, to improve upon so that we have the flexibility to pursue audiences and test and learn, but at the same time, we're putting more of our time against that and less against maybe some of the minutia of day-to-day marketing life?
Oh, for sure. I think there's a plethora of things that we could look into optimizing. Data collection, data processing. I think the biggest, the evergreen portion of what we can learn and what we could gain is around billing, where we spend our money, where we spend our clients' money, and making sure all that math adds up. At the end of the day, when you're measuring effectiveness, I imagine money's going to be involved in the calculation somewhere. So kind of doing some of the heavy lifting with computers to double check our own math, I think it's a big area that we can improve.
You need to define things. If you want a space to talk about what the definition is, the time to do that is before or while you're codifying the existing data.
Hank, I really like what you said about, if someone's got a piece of information that's critical to the success of a campaign and they have that stored in their head, that's a non-starter. And so I think one of the things that we're trying to do with Blueprint is encourage folks to get that information out on the page, whether you call it a campaign or an initiative, we don't care, just write it down.
Inside baseball alert, you just heard John mention Blueprint offhand. Blueprint is our proprietary internal media planning platform. We use it to organize the data from every brief, plan, and buy so we can seamlessly connect the dots across over 130 clients and the thousands of campaigns in market across any of the 40 plus platforms in use. Now back to the interview.
If you can focus on your decision, the decision you care about, way in advance, that'll lead you to all the definitions and codifications that you might need of reality and the information around you to provide a computer with what it needs to help you make that choice with mathematical accuracy. If you can focus initially on what choice you want help with, what advice do you want from the computer? That'll lead every decision down the way. So focusing early on your outcome is the most important thing.
Yeah, asking the right question is huge. And as far as I know, there's no computer that can help us tell us which question to ask.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of this, right? That's the context piece. And that's what gets missed a lot. The computers are good at answering one question. So we have to be specific and we have to be a little proactive in terms of what we're set that at, if I'm understanding you. And then to go a step further, we have to accept the limits that it can't do everything, right? And see it through to whatever it takes us to. And then we can react and pivot and go in a new direction. But it might mean a new tool. It might need a new approach. But at the end of the day, it's still the person who's kind of behind that process, who's guiding that, who's asking the questions, who's setting the endpoint. Right. And it's a back and forth between the technology and then the person to get us to the end of our journey.
Yeah. If you ask your Tesla to make cotton candy, you're not going to end up with a very good result. But if you want to ask it to drive down the highway without crashing, you're likely to get a very good result, because the people who programmed that car program it with the intention of being a vehicle that maneuvers in space. They ask the question, how do we keep this thing on the road? Not how do we make cotton candy?
And so with all things tech, we weigh the good, we weigh the bad. And we have to understand how people look at the good and the bad that technology brings. For some, it's a positive. You crave information, you want access to information, and with the benefit of that access comes a more curated experience. For others, corporations are overreaching into parts of their lives that maybe they don't belong, and that violates their privacy because, frankly, no one ever explicitly said, this is okay, please do this. At the end of the day, this is a business, and I get the value that leveraging a tool that gives you any competitive edge is going to be important to success. But doing it without understanding how it works will probably put you in an awkward situation before long. Simply knowing what or when or how someone takes action isn't really sufficient for building the relationship that our brands are entrusting us to manage on their behalf. We need to organize the data so that machines can learn from it, and in doing so, apply human process, human thought to why these data points matter. It's not just enough that we find a pattern. We have to find a pattern and be able to explain it. AI has incredible potential. I believe we can solve all three pieces in the media equation. The right message to the right person at the right time. But right now, it feels like some people are content to just run a message to the right-ish person every single time we see them online. And that's not a good user experience. That may boost your short-term return, but it's not going to build that long-term relationship. It's not going to help the brand forever. At some point in time, you're going to need to pivot. So again, what is that line between content and an ad? It's a matter of degrees. How relevant is the information? And then how disruptive is the delivery? Marketing is poised at the next great frontier. AI and automation will change how we advertise, as well as how we staff our agencies. But rather than just focusing on abstract targets, don't lose track of the people on the other end of those campaigns, or the people who are influencing the tools that we're building. Rather than just focus on ways to reduce costs, use the technology to find ways to increase the value of our staff. The ways we communicate keep changing, but we need people to remain at the center of that. We have a lot fewer print buyers today than we did in 1982, but that expertise was the foundation for our local media buying philosophy. Our history with TV shapes our expectations for video consumption. For all the data that we generate, for all the technical know-how that's out there, it's that context, that subject matter expertise, that domain knowledge that shapes how we can use these tools and how we can get the most value from it. And maybe sometimes how we explain why these tools are valuable in the first place. Technology is freeing us to focus on that big picture because it accelerates how we handle the small decisions along the way. The number of 20-plus year veterans at Harmelin speaks to the value of that human knowledge. And if we can unpack it and we can apply it through technology, all the better. But this is an amplification of the things that have made us successful. It's not a replacement for it. So when it comes to AI, tech can identify patterns, but humans connect the dots. So going back to where this whole conversation started today, I'll paraphrase McCarthy's point on AI. I don't really care what you call it, so long as it keeps working.
Thanks to our guests, Travis Adams, Megan Woods, John Connor, Hank Mushinsky, and John McCabe. Media Impressions is hosted by Greg Ebeck and produced by Gwen Lufkin, Emily Wolf, Chelsea Fletcher, and me, Jared Rudenstein. Harmelin Media thanks you for listening to episode 2 of Media Impressions.